You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. Today is the Friday show, and I'm John Corrales of the Raining Jays. I cover the Boston Celtics for MassLive.com. If you're new to the show, follow me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John. Today we're going to do a crossover podcast with the Locked On Bucks, which I've already recorded with Eric Name. He writes for The Athletic, covers the Bucks for The Athletic. He does the Locked On Bucks podcast with Frank Madden. Frank couldn't be part of it. We talked for like an hour. We did a long podcast talking about the matchups between Horford and Lopez and Bledsoe versus Kyrie and a lot of things, and it's very interesting, I think, and I always love doing these crossover podcasts, so I hope you enjoy that perspective. Before we get to that, there is sad news, if you haven't heard by now, that we lost John Havlicek. He passed away at his home in Florida at 79 years old. He is the Celtics' all-time leading scorer, one of the greatest players of all time, one of the 50 greatest players in the NBA. We all know Havlicek from that famous Havlicek stole the ball, which was the 1965 Eastern Division Finals against Philadelphia, where Bill Russell turned the ball over and Philly had a chance to inbound down one. And he famously stole the ball and locked up a chance to go to the finals in 1965, which they won. And so that was his famous moment. But Havlicek was a lot more to the Boston Celtics. And for younger people, hope you go back and take this opportunity to really go and appreciate what Havlicek meant to this franchise, this city, just how tireless he was as a worker, how amazing he was as an athlete, two-time All-American at Ohio State, drafted by the Cleveland Browns as a wide receiver. Then he came to Boston to play basketball for 16 years and be the all-time leading scorer and the all-time leader in field goals. And back then they didn't have three-pointers. Also the all-time leader in personal fouls, which is awesome. that was a tough guy, man. He's a tough dude. Too much to say here in the podcast. All I can say is that we owe players like Hondo a debt of gratitude. And I tweeted this out, but to expand on my sentiment, we owe these guys, these greats, these former greats, and you know, we're starting to lose these guys that built the league. And for a guy who was part of, he was kind of like that bridge between the Bill Russell dominating Celtics and all the way to the mid-70s and winning a title in 1974 with Tommy Heinsohn as his coach, of all people. So a guy like Havlicek is one of the founders of the league. He's not going to be mentioned in the same breath as some of these other guys, these, you know, the Magic and the Larrys and the Kareem and the Wilts and those guys, Jerry West, yeah, obviously Magic, and I mean Michael Jordan, and all the, you know, the more current guys, LeBron's. He's just not going to be mentioned with all of those guys. But the reality is that He's one of the forefathers of this league. He helped create an NBA that we see today. And without him being as good as he was and working as hard as he did and creating this Celtics mystique, and this Boston Celtics franchise wouldn't be what it was, what it is. So we all owe guys like Havlicek a thank you. And me especially, because he's a guy that set an example for the players that I loved. And when I was growing up, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of Havlicek. But the guys that he inspired were my basketball heroes. And if it wasn't for those guys, then this league wouldn't exist the way it does. And I wouldn't get a chance to cover the team, wouldn't chance to have a chance to cover the NBA. And it's a special privilege to have to cover this team. I mean, I walk out onto a floor every game and I sit there and I look around and I'm part of the NBA. I'm part of the fabric. I don't play, I watch and I write, but I'm there on the floor. I talk to those guys. I'm part of the ecosystem, that media that covers the league. And that's, I couldn't make it to the NBA as a player. I could as a member of the media. And that is very special to me. And it's not lost on me how important a guy like Havlicek was to the opportunity that I have. Because if it wasn't for him, continuing to make the league great, then the league may not have survived some of the things that it survived. And if that didn't happen, then who knows what I'd be doing right now. And who knows, I certainly wouldn't be doing this podcast, for example. So that alone is enough for me to appreciate his impact and what he's done and what he and others like him have given to people like me. And they've given a lot to the league. They've given a lot to the players, but I don't think those legends understand what they've even given to somebody like me and somebody like you listening. This league is a continued gift to all of you. And everybody that makes the league better is part of what I'm talking about. So we're gonna miss Havlicek. It's a terrible day for the Boston Celtics. It's a terrible loss for the city. But as long as we have the memories and the records, some of these things that may stand the test of time, it's going to be hard for, especially in this age of player movement, it's going to be hard for somebody to go out and score 26,000 points, 27,000 points to break his record. So thanks, Hondo. And, you know, it's kind of funny that as the Celtics get ready to take on the Milwaukee Bucks, that he won a championship in 1974 beating the Milwaukee Bucks. So hopefully Hondo becomes like this. He becomes part of the force and helps us beat the Bucks again. That would be great. So I'm sure the Celtics will honor him. I'm sure there will be some sort of patch on their jerseys to honor him. And just that's it. That's thanks. We'll take a little break here. When we come back out of the break, it's an extended conversation with me and Eric Name of The Athletic, a crossover podcast with Locked On Celtics and Locked On Bucks. Stick around for that. We'll be right back. Okay, Eric, you had one of my favorite tweets, to be honest with you, where it's about the the two fan bases yelling at each other, you don't understand how good we are now.
Yes.
And that's basically a great, I think that's a great place to start where for this crossover podcast and our joint kind of analysis of this series, because I think that's where both teams are. Like the Bucks were awesome, and Celtics fans are like, yeah, that's nice. And Bucks fans are like, okay, yeah, that's fun. You struggled with the Pacers and Noah Oladipo. Like, come on. So, let's go with that. What's your opening salvo here when it comes to talk to Boston Celtics fans? Tell us why the Bucks are so different.
Well, I mean, I think the easiest spot is probably just the fact that Thon Maker started Game 7 last year.
So
Thon Maker started. Jabari Parker played 29 minutes. A 40-year-old Jason Terry played 20 minutes in Game 7. Mm. Tyler Zeller played in Game 7. And Shabazz Muhammad played in Game 7. And not garbage time. Actual rotation minutes. So, like, if anyone is viewing these Bucks in the same way as last year's Bucks, like, I think that's probably the easiest place to start. Like, just think about those five guys and the fact that all of them played rotation minutes and the fact that none of them are on the Bucks any longer. Like, I think that's probably the easiest place to start. So instead of them, you know, you're going to have guys like Sterling Brown in there. You're going to have guys like Pat Connaughton, George Hill, Ersan Ilyasova, Nikola Mirotic, actual NBA players. Like, so you're going to take five guys that aren't real NBA players and put in five guys that are NBA players. So I think that's the easiest place to start, because that doesn't require any nuance, right? Like, that doesn't require you to, like, actually think through how this team is different. And then I think when you look at, you know, kind of the starting lineup for the Bucks, like, you're going to have a guy like Brook Lopez, which is very different from last year. And then you're going to have Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's obviously taken another step up to MVP. You're going to have Chris Middleton, who is a human flamethrower against the Celtics last year. I can't imagine that'll be the exact same, but he's still a very good player. And then you have Eric Bledsoe, who obviously might still be seeing the ghosts of Drew Bledsoe somewhere. But he is also going to, like, he was a much better player this year under Mike Budenholzer. So I just think, and I don't want to say it's a total disservice, but just I think, honestly, for both fan bases, the fact that these two teams played last year kind of throws, I think it kind of pollutes everyone's minds. And that, I think it runs the same for Bucks fans as it does for Celtics fans, that I just think it's really hard for anyone that watches either of those teams to think through anything else other than last year's series. And I just don't think last year's series has really all that much to do with this year's series.
No, it doesn't. And you know, I will go a step further and say the regular season series probably doesn't have much to do with this series either.
Yeah.
Because so many different things, there's so much different about this series. And I can just start at Gordon Hayward is different. And he didn't play in all the games, but like the Gordon Hayward that is going to take the floor against the Bucks on Sunday is nowhere near the player that any Bucks fan has seen in any of these games. So it starts there. And obviously, just like you guys, the Celtics have Kyrie Irving, who didn't play in last year's series. And Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have gone through this tough year, but they are coming out the other side of it a little bit better for it. And there's just a lot of there's a lot that's coming together now that's even making this Celtics team a little bit different than they were during the regular season. So it's different. It's different from both sides.
Yeah.
And so I guess the baseline here is neither fan base should really have anything in their mind, any preconceived notion in their mind, because a lot of this stuff is out the window. So let's just start with what I think is the biggest matchup here. And I got a little excited when you said Brook Lopez is in the starting lineup, because I think that Brook Lopez-Al Horford matchup is going to be the key matchup. And you tell me if this is the wrong thinking. I think that the Celtics don't start Aaron Baines. They start like Marcus Morris or maybe even Semi Ojeleye or whatever. But they go with Horford at the five to match up with Lopez, and they just drag him away from the perimeter, away from the rim, and drag him towards the perimeter and pull him away from the rim. And a lot of the things that the Bucks have done defensively through Lopez protecting the rim are going to kind of fall by the wayside. And if Al Horford can win that matchup and essentially play Brook Lopez off the floor, then that significantly changes something that's worked for the Bucks all year long.
Yeah, there's this thought that is very pervasive that, you know, the Celtics are going to play Brook Lopez off the floor. And I totally get it. But also, I just don't believe Mike Budenholzer feels the same way. I think as the season has gone on, the story of the first month was pretty much every press conference that Bud had, I would ask a question about Brook Lopez and how he was going to get played off the floor or how he was going to try to keep Brook Lopez on the floor. And obviously Bud got annoyed by it by the end of the season, but you know, or I should say by the end of that month, but by the end of the season, the Bucks were playing him pretty much no matter what. You look at the final Celtics Bucks game, Brook Lopez played, I think it was 34 minutes. He plays 34 minutes in that game, as opposed to the first game with Horford on the floor where he plays just 23, and the Bucks really struggled with the Celtics as the Celtics had, I think, franchise records in makes and attempts from three in that game. So, like, I think that first game really kind of sits in people's minds, and I truly do not believe that playing Brook Lopez off the floor is a thing that can be done. And I shouldn't say that it can't be done, but I truly don't know if I believe Mike Budenholzer will actually go along with it. I don't believe that he'll just say, oh, well, you played Brook off the floor, we're just going to accept that. He's just been too good this year. And I think they have enough confidence in what Lopez has done. You know, whether that is the final game before the All-Star break, they had him switching for the entirety of the fourth quarter against the Indiana Pacers, and he had a couple good possessions against Darren Collison, against Bojan Bogdanovic, like against Wesley Matthews. Thad Young. He had a number of good possessions there. And I think the Bucks believe that he can do some of that. We've seen them late switch in the last month or so, obviously something that the Celtics do all the time, with those late switches. So the Bucks have done some of that with him as well. And, you know, I just think it's kind of a spot where, I think there's, you know, just this idea that that's a thing that can happen, but I don't believe that Mike Budenholzer actually wants to do it. I think he will do everything in his power to keep Brook Lopez on the floor. And if that means Brook is switching some, if that means Brook is late switching some, if that means Brook is not dropping quite as hard as he normally does and trying to sprint out to Al Horford a little bit sooner, I think that'll at least be the Bucks' very first group of adjustments is how can we keep Brook on the floor?
Sure. And I would expect that because look, Brook Lopez is such a big key to a lot of what the Bucks do. I mean, obviously everything runs through Giannis. Like Giannis he's the guy with all of the gravity. And when he gets into the middle of the paint, like all of his assists are to kickouts for 3 points. It's wild to see how much attention a guy like that can draw. He draws all five guys. And Brad Stevens even said, he's like, you wish you could draw all five guys, but they're such a good 3-point shooting team that if you do commit all five guys to preventing Giannis from getting to the rim, you're going to get burned. So that being the case, though, there is still like Brook Lopez helps stir that drink, as they say, because first of all, defensively, he does protect the rim. And so obviously, The Bucks strategy is to give up 3-pointers to the least effective 3-point shooters, which is generally the guy setting the pick. And that's where the Celtics are different to me. Like Al Horford's guy setting the pick, So now he picks and pops, and you have to account for him. You have to account for him because you could give up 10 pick and pop threes to Al Horford, and he's probably going to hit four or five of them, and that's going to be a problem for the Bucks. But at the same time, Lopez is the guy that protects the paint for the most part. So what's the give and take? Like I can, in my head, I just have it so ingrained that you have to do something to account for Al Horford, because Al Horford's the one guy that's unlike basically any other guy that the Bucks have played. I mean, he's not Jokic, but he's in that same mold of a guy that can pop out. He's a better 3-point shooter, but he's a guy that can pop out and hit that shot and drive off of attack a closeout and pass like crazy. Like he'll drive and kick. The center for the Celtics is going to drive and kick. So I still see that as like Bud might say, Lopez, we're going to try to keep Lopez on the floor as much as possible. And I understand that, but I feel like at some point that's going to be a problem. And if it does become a problem, what's next?
Yeah, I mean, I think very clearly Al Horford's the best pick and pop big in the league. Like, I don't even think it's a conversation. So that's why the Celtics team is the team that I've said the Bucks should fear most of anyone in the Eastern Conference, because he's the best pick and pop big in the league, and then you have Kyrie as well. So for me, like, that is really, I mean, it's a huge matchup, but I think there's a couple interesting things there. I think the first thing is, one, how well do you believe Lopez can run him off the line? And then on top of that, this is just me speaking. I don't know that this isn't something Bud has mentioned. This isn't something Bud has talked about. Mm-hmm. Okay, Al Horford, drive by. Go for it. We're not helping. Like, to me, that seems like at least an answer. Like, you want to go for 40 tonight, Al Horford? That's awesome. I would love to see it, because at least in my mind, I think, okay, so I'm going to run you off the 3-point line. You're going to drive. You want 15 dunks? Go for it. I think Lopez is going to be able to contest enough of those. I think he's going to be able to make it tough enough on you in that situation. So that's at least something I've been thinking about. That's not something Bud has said. That's not something Bud has ever done. But at least in my mind, I do wonder if you say Al Horford beat me. Can he? I think it's got to be a question, right?
I don't know. I think Al Horford could beat him. I think he's quicker. He's quicker. And the thing.
But is that in his DNA? Is it in his DNA to score 35 a night?
I mean, he'll do it if he has to. I mean, he just came off a game where he took like 19 shots. So he'll do it if he has to. Obviously his preference is to pass first and to set his guys up. But if the read is Lopez is kind of running him off the line and they're going to give him these open lanes, he'll obviously be looking to see if guys suck in, because you can't just give up dunks. There's, and even if they say give up dunks, if Bud says give up dunks, it's still, there's a muscle memory for everyone else on the floor to just kind of dig, you know? So Al Horford is going to be looking for guys to dig, but if they want to give up open dunks, then he'll take them. He'll take as many open dunks as you want to get. At some point, there's,
but also like, this is what I would say. I don't know that it's an open dunk. Well, like, I think that undersells Brook Lopez and how good he is defensively and how well he moves his
feet. Sure. Okay. I'm sure it's not going to be just like a blow by in 10 foot of open space, but still, I think that that's still going to be tough. No matter, you can have the game plan all you want, but if a guy is constantly getting into the paint like that, eventually guys are going to, especially if it's close, it's just going to draw a lot of attention. And this is, we're talking about Al Horford. We haven't even talked about Kyrie, his role in all of this, because the threat of Al Horford doing these things is going to be enough for Kyrie to take advantage of and do his own thing. So if the Bucks get caught up in the what do we do with Al Horford, then I feel like the Celtics win already, because Al Horford is the most important guy in this matchup, in this series maybe, but they still have Kyrie and they still have Tatum, who is playing a lot better, and they still have Jaylen Brown, who's shooting a lot better. Like, they have other guys that are bigger scoring threats that really should be accounted for as well. So if the
feels like you're going to take a lot of possessions, though, if every one of those guys is going to be the scoring threat that you appear to be talking about at the moment.
What do you mean you're going to take a lot of possessions? Like,
well, how is everyone going to get loose if one person is getting loose?
Well, that's I see your point. I see your point. There's definitely something to be said for make Al Horford's usage rate like 40%, like Harden-esque. I don't think,
because, and again, like, that's kind of what I'm saying is that, like, obviously the Bucks are gonna have choices to make, but like if and again, this is me more talking more than anything Bud is doing, but like, you know, if I turn Al Horford into a scorer and don't let him get whatever it was, 20 with 5 assists, I think it was, in the final game of the year. In the first game of the year, it was, what, 18 with 8 assists? Like, if I take away the playmaking threat of Al Horford, I think I probably feel better about that. Like, I think that's really what kind of bends the defenses that the Celtics play against, is Al Horford being dynamic.
Yeah.
And not so much him as a scorer. Like, obviously, I'm not trying to concede dunks, but I do think that's something to think about. So I and again, like, this isn't to take away from Al Horford. As I said, he's the best pick and pop big in the league. So that's very much something that the Bucks have to be concerned about. But I do think there's a lot of interesting things there about, you know, how you attempt to cover him and, you know, what you can try to do there. Because, you know, at the same time, like, you look at the 98-97 win that they had, you gave up a bunch of shots to Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, but you contested a bunch of them. Like, Horford goes for 21 points on 21 shots. Irving goes for 22 points on 27 shots. So, you know, you gave up looks to them, but do you feel good about the looks? Like, if it's an inefficient night, you might also kind of be okay with that. So I don't know. Like, I do think, again, this is the worst matchup in the Eastern Conference for the Bucks, because of how insanely talented Kyrie Irving is, and because of Al Horford and just kind of the defense that they throw out there. But like, I do think there's a lot of stuff to think about. And then, you know, if you do play Brook Lopez off the floor, I do also wonder, have you really won? Because you're going to then have Giannis play 40 minutes in the night. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe, like, I just think you're getting more. If the goal is to play Brook Lopez off the floor, I don't know that the Bucks are that hurt over that, because, well, that just means Giannis is going to play more center. So he's going to play more minutes. And then you're going to try to, you know, fill some of those minutes with probably a power forward, but I guess that's to be Nikola Mirotic, maybe Arsenio Silva. Maybe those guys get played off the floor because of Tatum, Brown, and Hayward, and you bring in George Hill and go with that, or maybe you go Sterling Brown and Pat Connaughton with Giannis and Middleton as well there. Like, I don't know. I think there's a ton of focus on the Lopez Horford matchup, but I'm not totally convinced that playing Lopez off the floor is a huge win for the Celtics.
It's an interesting perspective, because, again, I've identified this as the thing, because stopping Giannis is just not an option.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break and come back with more of the conversation that Eric and I had when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Before we go, I want to talk to you guys about how challenging it is to hire somebody for a job. If I've said this before on the podcast, but I used to be a hiring manager when I was at WBZ in Boston. I used to have input on hiring and firing. And when I had that job, it would have been great if I had a way to combine all of the resumes that I got and and kind of easily sift through everything, something like ZipRecruiter would have been a tremendous help, because when a job opens up, especially in Boston, but when a job opens up, there is a flood of resumes. And if it could be from anywhere, anybody, and you don't know if you're getting a qualified candidate. So one place you can go to make sure that you can get a qualified candidate where the hiring is simple, fast, and smart, it's ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. So you don't have to go and find them all. They'll do it all for you. But they also have a powerful matching technology. So ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. So it's not hit or miss. They go and do the work and find the qualified people for you. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. And I can't tell you how often a resume at the bottom of the pile, and look, human nature is, when you're sifting through all of that stuff, sometimes you miss something. You don't want to miss a qualified candidate just because of where that resume sits in the pile. So they will spotlight the top candidates and get that in front of you. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. One day! That is, again, impossible for me to comprehend. But they do it. And right now, all of the Locked On Celtics listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn, LockedOn, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So this is the thing, because I look at the ripple effect is, like, in a best-case scenario, you play Lopez off the floor, which means Giannis is playing the five, which means Giannis has to defend the pick-and-rolls too. And then if Giannis is out there, then that's now there's nobody protecting the rim. And that means Giannis
– are the Celtics good enough at the rim to do that?
Well, that's going to be the question. Like, the Celtics are not good enough at the rim. The Celtics are not good at going to the rim. They're not good at drawing free throws. So there has to be a focus, like, from the Celtics' perspective – If they do get Lopez off the floor, it has to become attack, 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 attack. Because really, even if Giannis blocks you a couple of times, you have to put Giannis in an action to defend the pick and roll, and then try to test his drive to shot to block shots. Because then you have the potential to get him into some foul trouble, and that's the best way to defend Giannis. Is to attack him that way, get him rotating, and if you can get him from one side of the floor to the other and trying to get one of those help blocks, and you're aggressive in your driving, and he gets that body into you, and they call a foul or two, and he sits on the bench, then you've got something going. That's why I think the Lopez, it's not necessarily just playing Lopez off the floor. It's getting to the next step of, do you want to bring Mirotić in? Great. I've seen what the Celtics have done to Nikola Mirotić, and it's not pretty. And you want to play Giannis in the five? Great. I mean, not great, because that's a very effective lineup, I think, for the Bucks. But at the same time, it presents Boston with their best chance to defend Giannis by making him defend himself and either wear him down, because now if he's playing the five and doing all that stuff, even if he doesn't get into foul trouble, he's doing a lot of work there. Then he's got to get the ball and drive all the way up, and the Celtics are just going to foul the crap out of him, and Mook Morris is just ready to lay into that guy, and Shemi Ojeleye's got six fouls to use, and he's a brick wall. And then the trickle-down effect of all of that, to me, is fourth quarter, tight game, what's Giannis going to be after all of that work, all of that beating down, when the last 5 minutes, clutch you know, clutch time comes around, is he going to be able to finish the way he did in the first quarter? And can the Celtics take advantage of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you're looking at how to stop Giannis, I think it always starts with foul trouble. I think that's kind of the easiest way to go about all of this is, you know, if you get him in foul trouble, he's not as aggressive offensively, he's not as aggressive defensively. And I do think there could be, a big thing about getting Giannis to defend the five is that he doesn't get to wreak havoc on the backside. So, like, that's why, you know, I hear the Semi Ojeleye stuff, and it's like, I think the Bucks would love if Semi Ojeleye would play any amount of minutes in any game, because that's a win for them, because then Giannis can just wreak havoc on the backside, totally ignore Semi, and sure, they might hold the Bucks to a 104.5 points per 100 possessions, but the Bucks are going to hold the Celtics to 97 points per 100 possessions because Ojeleye just can't play. So, I think what's interesting, and I mean, that's why I think this Brook Lopez stuff is so interesting, is because the Bucks, as you're talking through all of this, the Bucks are very aware of all of this. They're very aware that they are at their best when Brook Lopez is on the floor. And I think, like, it's just going to be really interesting to see just how good the Celtics have to be to play Brook Lopez off the floor. Because I certainly can't imagine it's a 10-minute stretch in the first half where the Bucks are -8 with Lopez on the floor. Like, that's, I don't think that's gonna be enough. Like, that it's gonna have to be more extreme than that, because the Bucks know what Brook does. They know that he's able to protect the rim and kind of keep Giannis out of foul trouble. He's able to put Giannis in more favorable matchups. He's able to offensively spread the floor and give Giannis more space. Like, they're very aware of all of this. So that's why, it's just so interesting, because that's the thing to focus on. And part of me wonders just how stubborn Mike Budenholzer will be about this, in saying that, you know what, we're going to keep him on the floor no matter what. Like, we're going to find a way to make this work, whether that is, you know, switching him on to Kyrie and saying, and I talked to Jay King about this earlier today, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucks say, you know what, rather than taking Brook off the floor, we're going to have him switch on to Kyrie. And his only job is going to be to get Kyrie off the 3-point line. No threes. Like that. And again, that's an impossible task, because Kyrie can do such an incredible job from there. But if you can make those threes incredibly difficult, or if you can do everything you can to push him into the lane, like, I think you're still probably feeling good that, okay, Giannis can contest, Kyrie can shoot some mid-rangers, and, you know, there's probably gonna be some games where he beats you, but eventually, like, math wins. That's just how it goes. So, I'm very happy that we've spent as much time on Brook in how the Celtics are going to try to play him off and how the Bucks are going to try to keep him on, because I really do think, like, it's going to get to a spot where one of the coaches is just too stubborn in it. Like, one of them is going to be trying, like, Brad is going to be trying too hard to get Brook off the floor, or Bud is going to be trying too hard to keep him on the floor. And that's where this really becomes interesting, because I don't know that we've seen really much of any interest from Mike Budenholzer in playing DJ Wilson. And when you think about the Bucks going small, that's kind of their lineup that makes some sense. Like, a lot of the times when they've gone small this year, they've kept a power forward in there, and with a slow footed Nikola Mirotic, with a slow footed Ersan Ilyasova, I think the Celtics are going to be just fine with that, right? Like, okay, we got Brook off the floor, and those are the guys you're putting on?
Yeah.
Fine. This is great. We would love to attack either of those guys off the dribble. DJ Wilson, on the other hand, you know, he can move his feet well. He can do some switching. Maybe you don't feel quite as confident, but Bud hasn't played DJ Wilson in real minutes for kind of a longer time now. So I'm telling you this, John, I have no idea how this goes, because like we're totally right to obsess over that, but I just don't know in the end, like, if a ton of adjustments get made by either team, or if they just like try to like bludgeon this matchup right. and like try to say like someone is going to make a decision here. Like, I refuse to back down, and it's going to make for really interesting basketball, and basketball that I think is incredibly hard to predict.
Well, the thing about this is, okay, the Shemi Ojeleye thing is different. And I bring up Shemi for two reasons. One, I have this thing about Shemi Ojeleye. Two, we saw him do it last year. And when I spoke to Brad Stevens, he said, I love the way he put it. He said that it bought us 10 minutes of a guy that we need down the stretch in the fourth quarter of not fouling Giannis. And we know Giannis is going to get fouled. That goes without saying. And what Shemi does is he can move his feet. He's strong. He's not a reliable 3-point shooter. They're going to park him if he plays, he'll get parked in the corner, and I'm sure the Bucks will play often to help protect against the drive, and they will see if he can beat them from three. Sometimes he will, sometimes he won't. But if he can just go out there for 4-minute stretches, and give you, or 3 minutes, whatever it is, and give you two or three of those where he's keeping his feet in front of Giannis as best he can, and maybe he cuts him off once or twice, maybe. And if he needs to foul him, then he fouls him and earn him from the line. I think the cumulative effect, like I said before, of fouling Giannis, even if he gets 20 free throws, the cumulative effect of fouling Giannis may have a tiring effect, like down the line. It may sap his energy down the stretch in the fourth. I'm if it sounds like I'm grasping at straws, it's because I am. I know what Giannis is, and I know that he's better than he was last year. He's bigger, faster, stronger, all of that stuff. But when you throw Shemi out there, it gives you that few minutes of not Gordon Hayward, because they're not going to put Gordon Hayward on Giannis for very long. He might switch on to him, but you need Gordon Hayward to be in part of that closing lineup. You don't need Shemi. You don't need Mook to be down there. So Marcus Morris can get his turns. And sure, Al Horford's going to get his turns guarding Giannis. Everybody's going to get a turn, because it's going to take two or three guys to just slow him down anyway. But I do see the Celtics maybe using Ojeleye, but the beginning of this long-winded point is the Celtics can start Marcus Morris, and it's not a huge thing, because they started Marcus Morris a ton all year anyway when Aaron Baines was out. So starting a lineup with Marcus Morris at the four is not out of the ordinary. It's not a massive adjustment. The Celtics have done that for a very long time. So a lot of what the Celtics are doing, that in this discussion of playing Brook Lopez off the floor, really is also sort of what they've been doing anyway. It's not a departure from their game plan. The only difference is you're starting smaller at the four because of Marcus Morris, and you're bringing Aaron Baines off the bench. It's an adjustment, but not a huge adjustment for them.
Yeah, and you know, as I said before with Shemi, it's just like, okay, so the Celtics will hope to take advantage of the cumulative effect, and I think in the same way, I think the Bucks would try to take advantage of the cumulative effect. So if you put Shemi Ojeleye in for 4 minutes, whatever it may be, if you're plus four in those 3-4 minute stretches, I think you feel pretty good. Yep. If you're the Bucks. Like, so I think I really, so there's all of this, right, that we're talking about. And then I guess why I feel like Budenholzer will be so stubborn is the Bucks were a top five offensive team.
Sure.
And the Bucks were the best defensive team in the league. Mm-hmm. So when I obviously, it's fun for me to like talk about the adjustments and like all the different things that the Bucks could do, when in the back of my mind, I'm just like, Eric, maybe you're an idiot. Maybe the Bucks won't do anything different. Maybe the Bucks will say, we're the best team in the league, and we're not going to stop doing what we do. And again, that might be silly. That might be stubborn. That might be bullheaded. But at the same time, it's been very effective the entire year. It's why you are what you are, which again, just kind of throws me for a loop in all of this, because I don't know where that balance is. I don't know how much it would take to, you know, bring me out of doing what I do. And the Bucks this entire year have been very focused on doing what it is that they do. Like, they are, Bud focuses only on them. He doesn't really worry about, you know, focusing a lot on the film sessions of other teams or anything like that. Like, they're just worried about being themselves and doing that. And in the back of my mind, I just keep going back to, like, maybe he just says, screw it. Like, we're just going to play and be who we are. And in game one, if that totally doesn't work, okay, maybe we go into game two and we figure out some very serious adjustments. But also, you know, maybe it works and they end up winning game one. So I don't, like I said, man, I got this series is so strange to me, just because so often when we talk about playoff basketball, we talk about adjustments, and I'm so used to thinking of, you know, the ways in which the Bucks could upset a higher seed. And this year, they're the higher seed.
Right.
They're the best regular season team in the league. And, you know, I just kind of keep coming back to, like, all right, I think you really got to do something special to really get the Bucks out of their comfort zone, to get the Bucks out of what they're trying to do. And the part that makes it even more interesting is that the Celtics are the team that have the things that can really do that. Like they have Al Horford, the best pick and pop big in the league. Pick and pop bigs have, you know, exploited the Bucks the whole year. And then Kyrie's the best, I'm not going to say the best one-on-one scorer in the league, but one of the best one-on-one scorers in the league. Sure. And it just makes all of this really difficult and really, really tough to kind of figure out which direction this might go in. But, the thing I've mentioned this on a couple of podcasts and radio hits is just that, you know, I'm curious if I get to the end of this postseason and I just think to myself, like, Eric, you really overthought all of this. Because, like, you look at this Bucks team, they're one of 77 teams in the history of basketball to win 60 games in a season. They're one of 8 teams to have 45 or more double digit victories in a season. Like, everything that underlies this team tells me that this is a historically good basketball team. The only thing that doesn't tell me that is the history of the Milwaukee Bucks and how inept that they've been for years, and last year's playoff series and kind of everything else. But this year, like, if I just look at this year's numbers, it tells me they're very good and I shouldn't really doubt them. And it really does just kind of toss a whole nother question into all of this when you're thinking about the playoffs. And I think so often I've picked, like, oh, you know, like Bucks in seven, and like trying to think through, like, oh yeah, these Eastern teams are very close. And I mean, maybe the numbers suggest that they're not that close. So I don't know. It's a really interesting series.
It is a very, very interesting series, to say the least. I agree with a lot of what you said. And if I'm Milwaukee, if I'm running Milwaukee, like, just do what we do. Like, you don't want to overthink things as the coach. We overthink things all the time because that's what we do.
Of course.
That's kind of our job. You have 5 podcasts a week, plus your writing. Plus, like, we both cover the team, our teams.
Yes.
Like our job is to, like, okay, it's not to not write. It's to write, and you have to come up
and think of every angle, yes,
every possible thing. So yes, that's what we're doing. But yeah, I fully expect Bud to go out there, and this is our starting lineup. Why would, if you roll out there with a starting lineup that includes DJ Wilson, then you immediately open yourself up to, well, the Celtics have already won the game because they've made their adjustment without Boston having done a thing. And you can play, you start your lineup. Now, it'll be very obvious right away if that matchup is going to be overly problematic. Like if the Celtics have hit another gear and Brook Lopez is just killing the Bucks, and then he comes out of the game and then you adjust. But I agree. You throw Lopez out there and you see if all of this stuff that we're talking about theoretically, if in practice it can actually be done. Because it's not just Al and Brook Lopez aren't playing one-on-one. There are other guys. There's other guys that are going to switch. We haven't mentioned Chris Middleton. We haven't mentioned Eric Bledsoe. We haven't mentioned these guys that are also part of the defense that are going to help and hedge and rotate and all of these different things that are going to assist in some of the things that we're talking about. So it's not just Al Horford running a pick and roll or pick and pop with Kyrie. And there are going to be ways to play that. And it's going to be very interesting to see how, if Bledsoe is guarding Kyrie, do you just play that a little bit differently? Do you not go over the top? Maybe you start going under screens and daring Kyrie to shoot. And okay, then Kyrie becomes the guy. I'm a big proponent. Now, I'm a big proponent of let the star player, if he's like the one star player, let the star player go for 50. Like, one of my thoughts on this series, let Giannis go for 50. Not let, but if he goes for 50, fine. Hold the rest of the team to less than 50, and you're good. One way the Bucks can not be burned by Horford pick and pops is you just go under all of the screens, and you dare Kyrie Irving to hit all of those shots. And if he does, he does. But you make him not a passer, and then you eliminate Al Horford in that scenario for the most part because he's not getting the ball and he doesn't have the ability to exploit Lopez. That's a very simple little adjustment if they want to try that, because usually, if I'm not mistaken, they'll trail over the top of the screens and Lopez will drop, right?
Yeah, no, that is their base coverage. And I've written about it at The Athletic, but there's few players in the league better. There's probably not a better player in the league at getting over the top of screens and not getting touched. For some reason, Bledsoe's just, kind of like a savant at it. And that's kind of the basis of their whole defense, is that they're going to run drop coverage with Brook Lopez, and Bledsoe is somehow going to get over the top, not allow a three, and force everyone into that mid-range area. And I know very early in the season, Giannis was talking about the math problem for the New York Knicks when they played them, and because the Knicks just kept taking mid-range jumpers. And, you know, ultimately, I think the goal would be, all right, let's get over the top of these on Kyrie Irving. And okay, if he takes some mid-range jumpers, obviously that's a win. But I think the Celtics are going to be smart enough to know that that's what the Bucks want to do, and obviously put him in the pick and pop. But yeah, their goal would be to have Eric Bledsoe go over and have Brook Lopez drop.
So we'll see how they do that. I will say that if there's one disadvantage when I hear somebody talking about giving the Celtics open mid-range jumpers, it's like it makes me cringe because, man, these Celtics love taking open mid-range jumpers. I mean, just, they love it. Like, Jason Tatum, an open mid-range jumper is like that's his jam right there.
Yeah.
Everybody takes them. Mook will take them. Kyrie will take them. Kyrie is one of the few guys that I think is good enough at them where when he takes them, it's not bad. He's got that crazy right elbow fadeaway that he always loves to take, and he seems to hit a lot. But that's certainly something that I'm sure one of the Bucks' strategies is going to be, all right, let's see if we can bait these guys into these shots that they love to take a lot. So, we've been talking for a long time. This is going to be a long podcast. So let's not spend 40 minutes talking about the next, Chris Middleton, who has had a very good year. What should Celtics fans know that's different about Chris Middleton this year?
The Chris Middleton that took a whole lot of fadeaway jumpers and long twos he's not dead, but Mike Budenholzer has undergone a drastic shift in the way that Chris Middleton shoots. He is not, you know, one of the highest volume mid-range shooters in the league anymore. Essentially what kind of happens now is they'll put him in pick and roll action, and Middleton has always been very good in isolation, but most of the time, and I think Celtics fans kind of imagine this, like most of the time it'll be, you know, a baseline fadeaway jumper, a step back, something like that. It'll be inside the line. Most of the time now what happens is if he gets a switch on a pick and roll, he dribbles the big out until half court, takes him there, and then takes about two or three dribbles, shoots pull up three, and that's why he is one of the best isolation players in the league, according to Synergy. I think last time it was, I checked, it was like 1.1 points per possession for him in isolation. And the reason is, you know, he's changed a lot of his mid-range twos into threes. So that is obviously quite helpful. So to me, that's really the biggest thing, is that you're not going to see him operate in the mid-range as much as he used to, because Bud kind of just said, we're not going to do that anymore. And there was a problem with it in the middle of the year, and they talked it out, and they've given Middleton more mid-range jumpers since then. But it's still, you know, pretty overwhelming that he has really gone through this transformation where he's taking, I think it's, when I wrote it in January, it was that, you know, he'd kind of cut his mid-range attempts in half and move those out to the three-point line.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the opposite of what we were just talking about here with the Celtics and wanting those mid-range jumpers. I mean, that's going to be something that the Celtics would be trying to force Middleton to get back into. Yep. I don't think that's a tremendous part of the game plan for the Celtics, but I mean, I know that Middleton was just so important last year, and he had some huge games to help push that to seven. So, he obviously is your second best player. Or do you think that Bledsoe has risen to second best player?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of a conversation about that, because Bledsoe has been so good defensively. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a first team all defense player this year. Maybe it'll be second team, but I think he'll get an all defensive team nod. So he's been very, very good at that this season defensively. And then offensively, he's really been asked to go to the extremes where it's either threes or layups, and none of them between, none of the mid-range shots. But it has really kind of forced that on really everyone, is that your shot profile is really going to get cleaned up. So, there was an argument, if Frank was on here, I think he would argue that Bledsoe is maybe turned into the second most important, but I think from the easiest way for me to explain it is that the Bucks have a high floor because Chris Middleton is good just about every night. He's not going to have, you know, huge nights, but because he contributes as a playmaker, as a scorer, as a wing defender, he's going to be good just about every night. And that really raises the floor of the Bucks. The Bucks ceiling is dependent on Eric Bledsoe. If he has a good night offensively, they're really tough to beat. And Bud has said this the entire year, that when Eric is great, we are great. Like that is how this works. That if Bledsoe really has got it going, we're really going to have it going. We're at our best when Eric's at his best. Like he said all of those different phrases, and I think it's a slightly different version of kind of what I just said, but to me, Bledsoe is really the ceiling. So if Bledsoe has a big series, I think he could really swing it, and a good series from Bledsoe, to me, in many ways, means the Bucks end up winning this series.
Yeah, I think when we talk about the Celtics and Lopez with Horford, I feel like the opposite of that is Bledsoe versus Kyrie for you guys. And if he can do an effective job against Kyrie, keep him out of the paint, keep him from getting to the rim, and then if he's doing that, then it doesn't matter kind of what Horford and how that Horford-Lopez matchup plays out, because if Bledsoe is not allowing the penetration or limiting it, then the rim protector isn't as important. So if he becomes that point of attack kind of limiting defender, then it minimizes, that's a great way to minimize the impact of whatever Horford, even if Horford does play Lopez off the floor, then that the other guys aren't as aggressive as Kyrie. Now, Tatum has been more aggressive lately trying to get to the rim, and Jaylen Brown has too. So maybe there's a change in mentality. We'll see if the week of practice has resulted in Brad Stevens hammering home attack, 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 attack. If that's the case, then this might be, there might be some differences here. But I think the job that Bledsoe does on Kyrie is significantly important and could be a major factor for the Bucks in this series. I mean, I think the single best, the single biggest defensive factor, in my opinion.
No, I think you're dead on in this one. And obviously, I wrote something about Bledsoe and why he might be all defensive team. And against the Bucks, I think Kyrie's true shooting percentage goes from 55%, which is his average, to 48%. And you know, when you look at the games that he's had, and this is including a game where I think he was 6 of 12 from the 3-point line, if I remember correctly. Kyrie, his averages go from 23.9 points per game to 21.7 points per game. Assists down from 7.1 to 6.3. Field goal attempts go up from 18.6 to 22.3. 3-point attempts stay about the same. Field goal percentage goes from 49%. As his average. And again, this was when I wrote it, and I think this was February. So these things all could have changed from that moment, but I think pretty in a small way. But Kyrie 49% to 38.8% against the Bucks. And then, his 3-point percentage is the one thing that went up. And obviously as a 6 or 12 game helps out with that. And it went from 39.8% to 45.8%. But I do think there's a pattern this season of Eric Bledsoe against elite guards. He has done really well. And it doesn't matter if it's Dame Lillard, Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving. Like, he has really made guards work. And that's huge. That's really big. And again, I'm not sure if it's enough to totally swing the series, but making Kyrie work for those points is really big. Like, it's just, I think, undeniably big that if you can bring him down from his averages a little bit and hopefully not get full on NBA Finals Kyrie, like, you've probably put yourself in I think what it would be a really nice spot.
Yeah, that's, I mean, anything you can do to limit him. Obviously, I mean, it's the most obvious statement you can make, right?
Yeah.
That's why they pay us the big bucks. Is there anything from is there anything from your end, Celtics wise, that you would like to know, or questions you might have for the Locked On Bucks listeners? Just trying to flip it here so we can keep this to one
sure.
hour.
Marcus Smart, what does it mean? Does it mean anything?
Yeah, Marcus Smart. We're hoping that he is able to return maybe later in the series. It's not out of the question if the series is spread out, that they might see him towards the end, but let's assume that they don't. That hurts a lot because that's one more guy. I mean, you talk about down the stretch, having a guy that, first of all, having that option, that if they need defensive stops to have a guy like that, that doesn't need a ton of help, then that's a significant loss. Jaylen Brown's been filling in for him pretty nicely. Jaylen Brown's a pretty good defender. No one is Marcus Smart. The thing with Marcus Smart is that he recognizes things and he's great at calling things out before they happen. So he's a great kind of defensive captain in that way. The other thing that he doesn't generally need a lot of help. So if he switches onto a guy, then you can generally leave him alone and he'll switch onto Giannis and not, again, nobody stops Giannis, but Smart, not having a guy that can get low and not be moved by like Kawhi. And like one or two other guys move Marcus Smart. That's it. And so there's a temptation to take Marcus Smart in the post. And I'm sure Giannis, who's good in the post, would want to do that, but you can't move Marcus Smart in the post. And that's always fun. Like Boston Celtics fans always love seeing big switching on to Smart, thinking mouse in the house, and then try to back him down, and they turn around and take like a 22-foot fadeaway, and just like, what just happened here? So that's going to be a problem, because that takes away, if Middleton is going off, well, you can't switch Smart onto him to kind of be a pest, and you can't switch Smart onto Bledsoe if he's having that big game like you're talking about. So it's going to fall on Rozier. Now, Rozier might be like the PTSD for Bledsoe, and those guys might get into some. That would be an interesting little dynamic. And if that could manifest itself, then maybe it's not so bad that they don't have Marcus Smart, because Rozier would go out there and get underneath Bledsoe's skin. But I would say that more Rozier is less effective for the Celtics. And so
I will say, I do think I made the joke before about ghosts of Drew Bledsoe in the rafters at TD Garden, but you know, I do think there's still something there with Eric Bledsoe. Like, I'm not 100% sure he's over it. I know in that, that Bucks Celtics game, I can't remember if Rozier blocked one of his shots, or I know Tatum blocked a shot, but you know, like, there was just a kind of a period in the second half of that game where it's just like, Eric Bledsoe doesn't look quite right. And like, I don't think beating up on Reggie Jackson in round one means Eric Bledsoe is over what happened last year in the playoffs. Like, I do still think there is something there. I don't know if it's serious. I don't know if it will end up manifesting itself, but I'm very curious to watch it. I will say that.
Yeah. Hey, look, that's music to Boston Celtics fans' ears, because that's Terry Rozier is nothing if not confident, no matter what role, no matter how many minutes, no matter how much he's struggled all year, he will go out there and talk his shit. So that is going to be an interesting dynamic. But generally speaking, and he had a pretty good defensive series against the Indiana Pacers, but the Indiana Pacers aren't a great offensive team. And we're talking about facing an elite offensive team. And so I can't sit there and say that the Rozier that had a good defensive series, decent defensive series, is like, oh, we got him, he's fixed. Like, it's just not going to be the same against Milwaukee. They are different stylistically. They're much, much better. So I don't know what to expect from Rozier in this series. But hey, if he can go out there and get under Bledsoe's skin, then that's enough for me. But again, back to the Marcus Smart thing. A lot of the focus is on the defense. Like I said, here's one thing that really has hurt the Celtics, I think, is he is a very underrated point guard on the offensive end. He is just, he's good at seeing the floor. He is a very underrated passer. He's an excellent passer. And he allows Kyrie Irving to move off ball and catch the ball, catch passes off of pin downs, you know, cuts. They can run a floppy. He can just cut off the baseline. They can do so many different things with him that he can't do without Smart. And when they started Baines, they're starting one ball handler, Kyrie, with Baines and Horford and Tatum and Brown. None of those guys are going to handle the ball much. You can initiate offense a little bit with some of those other guys. You can initiate a little bit more with Al Horford. But when Smart was there, you can have Smart initiating the offense no problem, because he's very capable of doing that. So maybe the biggest thing is starting the game with just one ball handler on the floor. It just eliminates one of the dangerous things that Kyrie can be. And by putting the ball in his hands, he tends to over dribble sometimes, because he's so great at dribbling that sometimes he falls onto that crutch of, I'm maybe the best ball handler in the league, so I'm going to dribble my way out of this. And even the best ball handler in the league dribbles himself into trouble sometimes. So as much as they miss Smart defensively, they miss him. They miss him a lot offensively too.
I think, and I'll just segue right into Malcolm Brogdon and the Bucks not having him, because I think that's another question that exists in the series. But I think what is kind of interesting to me is that as I've talked to people and I've seen, I guess, Boston Twitter and Celtics Twitter and Celtics fans kind of think about this a little bit, is, you know, like, I think there's some thought like, oh, you know, what can the Bucks do if, you know, if the Celtics put out Hayward, Tatum, Brown in a small ball lineup, like, you know, how are the Bucks going to cover that without Brogdon? And in my head, it's like, well, you know, they might actually be better on defense with Sterling Brown. Like, Sterling Brown's more physical, bigger body. I think just overall a better defender. And then it's like, okay, well, if it's not Sterling Brown, Pat Connaughton, okay, you know, Pat Connaughton, I think, gets around screens a little bit better than Malcolm Brogdon does. Probably a little bit better defender than him as well. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe it'll be George Hill. And I would say the same thing, the long frame, the ability to actually guard point guards. Like, I think there's a bunch of stuff there that would suggest, okay, that could all work defensively, but offense, I'm really curious to see how the Celtics guard Sterling Brown, because Sterling Brown has been the Bucks' best corner 3-point shooter on the season. There was a time where he was up over 55% from the corners this season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's huge for spacing the floor around Giannis, but there's also, you know, I think when we talk about gravity, like, volume means something and reputation means something. And I think no matter what Sterling Brown does, people are going to guard Malcolm Brogdon closer, just because there's some, in some ways, brand name. There's in some ways just kind of how people feel about him. That's all going to happen. And with Sterling Brown, I don't know that they feel quite that same fear, because maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't shoot enough, or maybe he hasn't proven enough, whatever it may be. And I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, because obviously anytime you can help off of someone and have another help defender on Giannis, you're winning, right? Like, that's huge. So I'm really curious to see how the Celtics go about covering the other for the Bucks, whether that's Sterling Brown, whether it ends up being Pat Connaughton, some George Hill, whoever. That fifth starter with Malcolm Brogdon out, I think, is probably more interesting on the offensive end than it would be on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the Celtics do with all of that, for sure, because I mean, like, Giannis is such the focal point. We barely talked about Giannis in this. Giannis is like the best player in the league right now, and we barely talked about him. I think maybe because,
but I think it's you know how good he's going to be,
right? Right, like, it's just a given. Like, he's awesome, and can the Celtics limit him enough? But if he's just so damn good that nothing that the Celtics do works, then what ends up happening is it's impossible to guard all those other guys, because you got to react to Giannis, and then he makes Sterling Brown possible by finding him in the corner, and he makes Malcolm Brogdon possible, or Chris Middleton. Like, all those guys just feed off of the greatness of Giannis. And look, this is the genius of the Bucks. The construction of the Bucks this season has been perfect for maximizing Giannis's skill set. That's why he's an MVP candidate. Not only just because he's improved his own game, but because the team has maximized his abilities. It does raise questions, which we won't tackle here, about how the Bucks will continue to be constructed after this season, which is a big, big storyline, an underrated storyline for the summer. But for now, this is the team, and these are the guys. And how the Celtics guard Brown or Brogdon or all of that depends on how they are able to control Giannis. How much can they control what he does? What are they going to allow, and what are they going to take away, and how much can they limit? They can't just let him run roughshod. But if they do, then he can't do like other things. He's either just dunking all the time and not passing, but he can't be like 40 points, 15 assists or something like that. Like he's going to be no. like 50 points, 2 assists like that.
Yeah.
That's the Giannis that they, if they got to pick something in it, and I'd rather see him be the scorer than the passer. Like if it was 15 points and 20 assists, then I don't know what his career high is, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If he's creating so much, you know, gravity and kicking out, and it's just fine, I'll just kick it out all the time, then that's going to be a problem, because if he's getting that many assists, that means a bunch of other guys are just killing the Celtics. So
and that's the way teams have leaned. They've leaned to if we're going to let Giannis do something, it's going to be more of a scorer than it is a playmaker. I think that's when Giannis is at his most scary, is when he's mixing the scoring and still getting his foolish playmaking though. Like that's when he's at his most terrifying. If you can kind of control one of those, I think you feel a little bit better.
I will say that I think for the Celtics, like the scariest prospect for the Celtics is that they just get tormented by Giannis here. The Bucks win the series and they find a way to keep this going. I think the Celtics have, they in absolutely no way approach it this way, but I'm sure Danny Ainge might be sitting up in the corner office and saying, you know, if we could just find a way to beat the Bucks in this series, maybe, just maybe, the salary cap issues that the Bucks have will cause enough turnover that the maximizing of Giannis gets diminished, and he's not the, like, LeBron just left. We got rid of LeBron. We don't need another one of those guys in our way.
Yeah.
And there's going to be like, I'm sure, like this kind of like praying almost, like, come on, just do it. Just this one time, find a way to win this in seven. Find a way to win this in seven. And then maybe the Bucks feel like this roster is going to get too expensive to re-sign everybody, and something goes wrong, and that causes enough problems where Giannis doesn't have enough help next year, and the Celtics don't have that obstacle in their way.
Yeah, I think that is something that lingers over this entire postseason for the Bucks, is, you know, exactly how are you going to try to decide who you want to sign up long term. And I think it's really easy if you go to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think it's really easy if you obviously go to the NBA Finals or win the NBA Finals. You know, you just sign everyone back up. But if you lose in the second round, you know, you got to think about all this stuff. Like, you know, I think in theory you think this is great and, you know, the team is a 60-win team, but man, signing everyone up and getting awfully close to the luxury tax, or maybe even possibly in the luxury tax, by bringing everyone back in a season where you only went to the second round, it becomes awfully tough. And, you know, if that becomes awfully tough and things snowball a little bit, then all of a sudden Giannis doesn't want to sign his Supermax extension next summer. And yeah, I agree. I think all of that, that is very possible. So the Bucks know. And I think that's why you saw the Bucks kind of push everything in to the middle of the table with, you know, making the Mirotić trade, making the George Hill trade. I think they knew that, you know, got to find a way to go as far as you can this year and make it obvious to Giannis you're about winning and you have some results there and he should want to sign up long term.
Okay, it's a little too big picture, but
I think so.
It's something that's there. And again, look, from a Celtics perspective, I'm sure Celtics fans looking at Giannis, looking at this monster of a player and how great he is, anything that minimizes him moving forward is great. So it's good to put this bug in people's ears. Let's get back.
While we're here, Kyrie, New York, right? Like that's also a thing if the Celtics lose.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
No, it's both teams do have that possibility. If the Celtics, yeah. If the Celtics lose, I think it might be like how do they lose, and what moves do they make? So sure. For Kyrie, if they lose because it was Tatum and Brown or Terry Rozier or somebody else trying to be a hero and taking away his opportunity to be the hero, I think that wouldn't sit well with him. If, if he plays, if both teams play their asses off and Giannis just has a, you know, one of those game sevens for the ages that these MVPs sure. always have on their resume, 42, 15, and 11 triple double. And he was just, he's the MVP and he shows it in that moment. Like if that happens, then there's less of a feeling like that, a frustration, I guess. Like if you just lose to the better team, you lose to the number one seed because the MVP beat you. Then the next step would be, all right, well, what are we doing to beat that guy next time? So then that puts the onus on Danny Ainge to go ahead and make that Anthony Davis trade. And so then if the Celtics make that Anthony Davis trade and Kyrie can be like, all right, we've got Horford. We've got, I don't know how the whole thing would break down, but you know, we've got me, we got AD, we got like a big three here.
Sure.
I'm ready to roll with these guys as opposed to, you know, I'm going to go start over. Like if the Celtics can make the moves to convince him, like, okay, we ran into the roadblock and we're making this move to get us to the next step. Especially if he looks at what happens to the Bucks and say, okay, Bucks lost these guys. We got this guy. I like where we are. What happens to Kawhi in Toronto? Does Kawhi go to the Clippers? If the East breaks where he can feel good about staying with the Celtics, then great. Although I can easily sit here as I'm talking and say, well, if the East breaks and it's wide open, then he can say, well, I don't need to stay with Boston to be a contender. I can go to New York with KD and be a contender. So I've now talked myself into, you know, a lack of sleep. There is a thing. There is a feeling here that Kyrie could go to New York. There's certainly a draw there for him to go back home. He's a Northern.
So just
kid.
A little bit on the line for both teams.
A little bit.
Okay.
So we'll just leave it at that. Okay. Are you comfortable making a prediction in this series?
I am. I've power ranked my predictions. So my top three predictions are Bucks in seven, Bucks in five, Celtics in six. That is how I go 1, 2, 3. Those are, I think, are the three most likely outcomes there. I think Celtics in six becomes a little bit more. I think Celtics in six is possible if they split the first two at Fiserv Forum. If they split the first two in Fiserv Forum, that's the game seven possibility. But I do think if the Bucks manage to win the first two at Fiserv Forum, I could see it going a little sideways for the Celtics just with how they are, I suppose, just with their personalities. And then winning one in TD Garden and then taking care of business in five. So that is how I rank them. But Bucks in seven is where I feel most comfortable.
Okay, that's fair. I'm kind of... Like Bucks and seven makes perfect sense, right? Like just removing everything from the situation, I can sit there and say, yeah, Bucks and seven, this is going to be a great series.
Man, I hope it is.
I mean, I do hope it's a great series. Like I don't want like it to be a dud. I'm leaning towards Celtics and six and might be a little bit of a homer reaction there, but I'm putting a lot of stock in the Horford Lopez impact, not just individually, like I was saying before. I like the ripple effect that it creates, and I think it can create enough where the Celtics take advantage, and you use the term Budenholzer's stubbornness. I think there's something to Budenholzer's stubbornness and allowing something like that to be a problem for a little too long. And I think the Celtics can steal one of these first two games in Milwaukee and then close things out in six when things get tight and the Celtics are at home and they're just a different team at home. I think the matchup can be enough to steal a game and then be chalk the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But like I said, there's the voice in the back of my head that's like, you know, the Bucks are just way better than these teams. But then there's me watching the last 20 years of Bucks basketball and saying the Bucks are not better than anyone. whatever could go wrong, will go wrong. But I do think, like I said, going into the playoffs, this was the team that I said Bucks fans should fear the most. And it's pretty much because of what we talked about. You know, they're bad against pick and pop bigs, and Al Horford's the best at it in the entire league. And Kyrie Irving is Kyrie Irving. And in the postseason, he's just so damn good. You put that together, and I mean, that's really what creates a really strong, case for the Celtics being able to beat the Bucks.
We'll see, man. We'll see. We'll just leave it there, because I'm sure we'll be talking to each other throughout the course of this series.
I
do hope this is a good one. It should be a good one. I think both teams are at a place now that this should be a good one. All right, let's just leave it at that, and we'll talk next time. Great conversation with Eric. We could have gone on forever, and we almost did. So hope you enjoyed that Locked On crossover. Again, Locked On Bucks. Go ahead and check them out if you haven't. I like the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'll just listen to them because I just think those guys do a great job. Eric and Frank are just awesome. So go check out Locked On Bucks. It's a great podcast. And Eric writes for The Athletic, covers the Bucks for The Athletic. So you know he does a great job there. You can always subscribe to them or to us. If you're a Bucks person who is coming over to check out us, the Locked On Celtics podcast, please give us a subscription, because just like the Locked On Bucks podcast, we think we're pretty good too. So it's always good to keep up on the competition. Subscribe using the brand new Himalaya podcast app. Himalaya will curate podcasts for you based on your interests and likes. So check them out. Also, you can find us anywhere podcasts exist: Google, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, or you can get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics or Locked On Bucks or Locked On whatever. We've got podcasts all across the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, so Locked On Patriots, Locked On Red Sox as well. All of you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating, a good written review, and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packett, and J. King.